Thank you. The recording's just been started. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's IRTP call on Tuesday, the 23rd of November, we have James Bladel, Mike O'Connor, Kevin Erdman, Barry Cobb, Simonetta Bottega, Matt Serlin, Bob Mountain, Chris Chaplow, Paul Diaz, Anil George. From staff, we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies today noted from Barbara Steele, Michaela Malon, Oliver Hope, and Baudouin Chambé. So could please also just remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, James.
Thank you, and good morning. Good day, everyone. Today's IRTP call for November 23rd, and I'm James. McKaylee has asked me to cover for him for this meeting as well, and hopefully that's acceptable to everyone. Before we dive into matters of substance, wanted to give everyone the opportunity to notify the group whether they have any changes to their statement of interest or their declaration of interest. So I'll give folks, let's say, going once, going twice on that. If there are no hands in the queue, we'll move on. Okay. So Marika has posted the agenda for today's call in the Adobe chat window for those of you who are able to access Adobe. We had some discussions this week and this morning relative to planning out the work between now and Cartagena. I think the first order of business would be to establish that this group is planning to have a meeting next week, next Tuesday, 1 week from today. And hopefully that will not significantly impact travel time. I think most folks are departing for Cartagena later next week, but I think we could, based on what remains to be completed, I think that we still have quite a bit of work to do and could really use that time. So can we just maybe poll the group? Does everyone feel like they could make a call next week?
Chris here. I don't think I can. I am actually traveling then.
Okay.
Yeah, James, I'm in the same boat. This is Matt. I'll be traveling ahead of Cartagena on Tuesday, so I won't be in the office.
Okay, thanks, Matt. So we have a couple of folks that won't be able to make it, and I see four, well, including myself, four check marks in the Adobe that of folks that will be able to make it. So, you know, I think we've got quite a bit to cover so before our session in Cartagena, so we will probably push through with a meeting next week. I just really think that we should take advantage of the fact that this group meets early in the week and see if we can squeeze another session in before South America. Okay, so the first item on the agenda is, and it's been posted now into the Adobe window, is a draft work plan with milestones and deliverables that was adopted by, I think it was adopted by Bob, Mikey, and McKelly and Marika. And I apologize if I left someone off that list. So what we'd like to do is maybe spend 15 minutes going over the items on this work plan and make sure that everything is approved by the group, and then we can proceed to laying out who should be, you know, we put out a call for volunteers to take ownership of different subtasks and then have those folks drive those tasks to conclusion according to this timeline here. So, Marika or perhaps Bob, whoever is most appropriate, would you like to walk us through this this work plan?
Yeah, this is Bob. Marika, would you like me to talk to it?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Okay. So I think, you know, just to, sorry, this is a team effort. A lot of input from Mikey, Marika, and McKaylee went into this as well. I was sort of the collator more than anything. But the thing we did is we went through the date as to when the delivery of final report is and then worked back from there. It was amazing at how much has to be done between now and then. And we were actually really scrambling to try and compress things because I think we're to have a comfortable interval to deliver some of these things, which is not possible if we're going to have the final report submitted by the 21st of February, which is when it would need to be done to have it, that's the deadline for the San Francisco meeting. So the keys on this were to, first of all, today approve the project plan, or very close to today, so that we can then move forward. Finalize the agenda for Cartagena by the end of this week, and then at Cartagena, have a detailed agenda which is going to enable us to make the best use of the 90 minutes that we have. Some suggested bullets were included in the project plan that you all received, but I think these were actually penned by Mikey, and I thought it was very good that. Essentially using the time to review the input and findings so far, identify the areas of consensus so we can nail those down and put them aside, and then use the balance of the time to work through the areas that where we don't have consensus. So if there are areas of disagreement, of which certainly on ETRP there are a few, let's just use the FaceTime to hammer them through. Coming out of Cartagena, we then have a couple of weeks, given the holiday time, to create a first draft. Then the following week, assemble a final report draft. Then the public comment round, we give ourselves the public comment round, and then the final report candidate, and then give ourselves a couple of weeks after that to collect and review the final comments. I think Marika's input was that we would need extra time there. So you might see that we compressed somewhere else to give ourselves a couple of weeks to do that. That gives us then the final report revisions on the 15th of February and delivery on the 21st. So even though San Francisco in March sounded like a long time, when you look at the schedule, it is fairly compressed, and I think we're going to have to hustle to get everything done. This project plan really needs to be replicated across five different items. That's where it really starts to get tricky, and that we have the five charter questions that all need to be addressed. I guess one of the decisions we need to make is do we go full out across all five and try and work through the above project plan across each one of the five, or do we prioritize and focus on a smaller number and just try and get them done? So that's kind of where we came out on the project plan and the timeline of deliverables for to get things ready for San Francisco. So any questions?
Thanks, Bob. This is James. I do have one question, and I think we may have discussed it last week, and I'm just being a little dense here, but is it required by the PDP process to put the draft final report out for comment and then incorporate those comments into the final report? Or I guess I'm just not clear. Some of the working groups I've been with have just gone from initial report, received comments, and then put out a final report, but they didn't modify the final report based on comments received. Marika, no need to raise your hand. I'm looking for your expertise on this.
Yeah, this is Marika. There's no requirement to put out a draft final report for comment, but what we discussed in the previous meeting is that it looks like there might be quite some changes to the preliminary recommendations that were in the initial report compared to what might go into the final report. It might be recommendable to put those recommendations out for another round of public comment to make sure that people aren't caught off guard or are surprised because there are issues that they might not have seen before. So I think there is some flexibility there maybe to move that up if indeed the group first focuses on the language for the recommendations. Those could go out separately. They don't necessarily need to be part of the report because we can continue working on the report because what the report actually does is just capture the discussions we've had to date, and that partly is already reflected, I think, in the public comment review tool, and already some changes that I've suggested based on discussions we've had. So we could link, for example, in such a public comment forum to the draft final report so people can look there what we are doing. But I don't think it's a requirement that we already have a complete final draft before we launch public comments. If before that time we already have a list of draft recommendations ready. But again, it's a group decision. But I would strongly recommend if the group sees that the recommendations they would like to go with in the final report differ significantly from those that were included in the initial report, that those are put out for another round of public comment.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Understood. And I think that if we are anticipating significant changes to our recommendations from the initial, that we should do that. And I think that this plan allows us to do that and still hit our target date. Any other questions or concerns about this this roadmap from the group? I see I've got a queue here, so I'll go to Paul first.
Thanks, James. It's Paul. Yeah, I appreciate the effort that went into putting this timeline together. Yeah, I will work very hard with colleagues on the work group to get it done. Do note, though, that it is very ambitious given the pace of policy work to date. You know, and it is what it is. But to that end, what I would suggest that the group do is whoever our liaison is to the council, I know in another group, or perhaps it was this one, if it's Tim Ruiz, that whomever the liaison is, that he or she be immediately advised that the working group has developed this timeline, that we are going to work diligently to get it done. But we recognize we do still have a bit of work, and it's a pretty aggressive timeline, so that the council should be, you know, apprised that we're going to make every effort to have it on time for San Francisco, but more time may be necessary. It's just a formality. Let's not forget to do that. I guess that's my point. And that needs to be communicated back to McKaylee, because I think historically it's the chair who tells the liaison and then gets it communicated to the council. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Good point. And I should mention that possibly due to McKaylee's travel and most likely due to the fact that I work very closely with our council liaison, I have been keeping him in the loop as far as the development of this work plan. So he is expecting it. Once it's finalized by this group, we can, you know, I can take it over to him, copying McKaylee, of course, and make sure that he's advised and he's taking all that to council. Next in the queue is Mikey.
Thanks, James. It's Mikey. You know, I'm looking at this, and I think I'm with Paul now that I look at it all on one page. I just really wonder whether we can do this. I mean, this is awfully tight. And I thought that wasn't there correspondence between Tim and the council where he gave the council a heads up that we didn't think we were going to make it to San Francisco, or did I just hallucinate that? Anyway, I don't know. I guess my reaction is, wow, this is awfully tight. That's all.
Thanks, Mikey. I agree. It is very ambitious, as Paul mentioned. I would even go so far as to say it's aggressive. But, you know, I think just my own personal opinion, and, you know, McKaylee certainly may have other thoughts, is that better to lay out an aggressive plan and miss it by a couple of weeks on the tail end than not lay out an aggressive plan at all, I guess. I think I'd rather, you know, my preference would be to put a stick in the ground and you know, aim for it and you know, see where we're at and measure as we go along the way and see if we miss it a little bit, then that's probably a better outcome than just kind of acknowledging you're going to miss it at the outset and then meandering towards you know, wherever the Asia meeting is going to be. but that's just my preference. That's what I understand. I think you and Paul hit it on the head with saying this is going to be very tight. Chris and Bob are in the queue, but I think Marika may want to weigh in on this.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think, you know, I agree it's a very aggressive plan, and you know, there are probably less meetings there than we would have hoped. But I think part of being able to finalize or you know, make sure that we can agree with this plan depends as well on the feedback received on the draft recommendation as they currently stand. Because I think it might help, and Barry made a good suggestion, and I think we discussed it as well on previous call. It might be an idea to do a small poll on the draft recommendations as is, before the Cartagena meeting, basically, you know, putting the language in a poll, basically saying, do you agree, yes, no, maybe if you would change this, or I have an alternative suggestion, which would really help get input from all the working group members or where everyone sits. And, you know, maybe based on the poll, it turns out that on, you know, a number of the charter questions, we actually don't need to go through all these steps because we have general agreement on the language that is, or there's just some small tweaks. And maybe it's just, you know, indeed the ETRP that is the big chunk of work where everyone can then focus on, which makes it more likely maybe to meet all the deadlines. So, you know, my proposal would be to, you know, to use that poll in preparation for the Cartagena meeting. So at the Cartagena meeting, you would really have a sense of where the group sits on the different issues and different recommendations that are in the draft document. And from there, it might be easier to really say, okay, so this is really the work that we still have outstanding, and this is what we need to do in order to get, you know, to that deadline that we've set ourselves.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Next is Chris.
Yes. I think Mikey was hallucinating, but I've forgotten now what it was about. That was, I would have jumped in but decided not to. I was listening to the council call just the last couple of days, and I think we did report that we were attempting to deliver by San Francisco. I'd have to listen to it exactly again, but towards the beginning of the recording, that is reporting. I mean, our actual original charter talks about a preliminary final report at T plus 220 days, and we are now at about T plus 450, I think. So either the original estimation was way, way out of what we could achieve, or we've gone a bit slow. But anyway, we've got to give it our best shot, haven't we? Which, to answer James's question, if I picked it up right at the beginning, looking at the five subtopics, which we want to deliver on all five, am I right in thinking our fundamental question is, do we go for these in serial, or are we going to try and go for these in parallel? My question.
I think that question is on the table. I think it was Bob that raised that initially.
Pardon.
And I think that is one of the questions that's on the table. If someone is typing, could we ask for mute buttons? Bob, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, this is Bob speaking. Yeah, I guess I think it is aggressive to the point of being unrealistic to have all five addressed in time. I think if my opinion is if we were to cut it down to a much smaller number, that it would be ambitious but achievable if we, all sort of agreed to focus, assigned a project lead, small number of project leads. I think that has a chance of hitting it, and I would echo, you know, the previous center. I think it was James who said, set an aggressive goal, and even if we miss, we'll still be farther ahead than if we, if we did not. So, again, I think, you know, if we just, you know, agree to hunker down and choose a smaller number, I think we have a chance. I don't believe that all five are feasible, though, in the time constraints allow.
Okay. And thanks, Bob. I think that that's where we're all kind of coming to the same conclusion as well. Now, with the just looking at the chat window here, there seems to be some discussion about what where the expectations are with council and what we had mentioned to them in our status report, and we can certainly get synchronized with them in Cartagena once we finalize this work plan. I think that the overriding message I received from Tim was something to the effect that it's less important to look at the actual dates that were laid out in our charter. As you mentioned, we're on day 400 or something, and our charter has milestones at day 200 that weren't delivered. So it's less important to focus on the numerical dates, and just more important, I think, to follow the prescribed process and make sure we're keeping council informed of our status as we go along. And I think that that's something that we should just continue to strive to do. The queue is clear, and you know, I think can we poll the group here real quickly and just say, you know, of the folks on this call, do we agree that setting an aggressive work plan is the right approach? Even if we miss it, we'll be further down the road than if we didn't have an aggressive work plan. And then secondly, is this that aggressive work plan that we want to see? I see looks like rough support for that via the check marks. Okay, so then the second part of that compound question is this: is this the approach that we want to go forward with? You know, leaving the door open to, you know, adjustments and modifications as we encounter new challenges, which we're certain to do. Okay, I have rough support for that as well. Also have a note in this chat with Barry, and then I have Paul in the queue. Barry, can I put you on the spot a little bit and ask you to speak to your idea about extending the length of our call?
Hi, thanks, James. Yes, yeah, Barry. Just an idea that we've done with other calls is extended our weekly call to an extra hour, and that way we kind of double things up in terms of the effort, just to really push for the, you know, striving. If we set it up now and plan to start those in January, I think that would be good, and that's far enough in advance that people can adjust their calendars. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry. I agree that that has been effective in previous working groups. I also agree that it's very unpopular. That's why I'm going to defer until our permanent chair returns after Cartagena, and we'll capture that decision and we'll put it to him when we meet in Columbia. Paul was in the queue, but now he's dropped. So, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. As we're talking about planning and next meetings, I wanted to note as well that there are two meetings on the project plan that have a question mark. One is the one of 21st of December, and the other one is the 4th of January, as both of them are very close to the Christmas period. So I guess the question would be as well whether those calls should be scheduled, or, you know, whether people are not planning to participate in those, or whether we leave them for now with a question mark and see closer to the date. I don't know if there's any opinion on that now, or whether people want to wait until Cartagena to discuss and decide on that.
Thanks, Marika. And, you know, my inclination is that we've already identified this as aggressive and that we should leave those dates on the calendar and, you know, recognize that based on attendance, we may not achieve a quorum to have those calls, but if there's an opportunity to have those calls, that we should try to hit them. Okay, so it looks like there's
James.
Go for it.
Yeah, as I said in the note, I didn't respond earlier because Barry keeps beating me to the questions. But his last question for the poll, I'd strongly suggest putting in the question about timing, both when the meetings for this group would take place in late December, early January, and then also the question about extending the time. And Marika, or if you or any of your colleagues on the staff can look to see, would pushing it another full hour or 30 minutes more, would that automatically conflict with anything else that you're aware of? I just think it would be worth, if we're all looking at a poll anyway, rather than saying a doodle's forthcoming, get it out, take advantage, all in one fell swoop.
Okay, Paul, thanks. I think that's an excellent idea. So the questions that we're putting to the doodle are what specifically that we are going to be having calls on the 21st of December and the 4th of January, and that beginning with the call on January 4th, the calls will be either 90 minutes or 120 minutes. And we want to, before that poll goes out, we want staff to just do a sanity check on the GNSO calendar and make sure that that's not immediately overlapping another call. Is that...
Yeah, if I can be so bold, James, I would ask you know, just lay out, Marika, if you will, in the poll. Will people, do people plan to be, to attend, I'm assuming the 14th, 21st, I have to assume we're automatically going to cancel the week between Christmas, New Year, or put it in there, what the heck. So it would be 14, 21, 28, and 4 January. And then the second half is, if you attend, can you stick it around for an extra 30 minutes, an extra hour, what have you? And just make sure that if we push it out, that doesn't automatically conflict with other previously scheduled calls.
Okay, thanks, Paul. I think that makes sense. Marika, is that accessible? Have you been able to capture that?
Yeah, this is Marika. I've captured that, and I'll add it to the poll.
Okay. Okay, so the queue is clear, and we are at half past the hour, so just putting it to the group here, maybe we can close off this section of our agenda. It sounds like we have an aggressive work plan. We have a proposal to extend the calls and meet at every opportunity between now and the end of the work plan, even if it bumps up against some holidays. We'll try and achieve quorum during those days. We're going to put that out to the doodle as far as extending the calls beginning January 4th. Okay, so I guess the next step would be to thank everyone who contributed to putting this together and recommend that we move on to discussing the comments. I'm looking at the agenda. Did we gloss over the Cartagena meeting planning, or did we want to spend some more time on that, or are we good on that agenda point? Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think we covered a lot on what we want to discuss, and I guess the poll will help prepare for that as well. I just wanted to know that the meeting was extended as requested last time by 30 minutes, so it's now scheduled from 9:30 to 11.
And thank you, Marika, and thanks to you and your team for getting that done. I know that making changes to the schedule at this date is, you know, nothing short of miraculous. So thank you. Bob?
Yeah, this is Bob. I guess the question that the other thing we talked about last week was whether we wanted to have a moderator for the session on ETRP, and I just wanted to know if we had any further consideration on that, or if we were just going to handle it internally.
I think that, and I may be testing my memory or crossing my wires with different groups, but I think that we thought that if we couldn't handle it internally, that staff might be willing to take on that role. Or did I just sign you up for something, Marika, or is that your recollection as well?
This is Marika. I think you just signed me up for something. I do recall, I think, that someone suggested maybe someone like Ken could help, but I think I noted that he's not scheduled to attend the Cartagena meeting, so that might be difficult.
So I remember we were talking about, you know, whether you and Margie would be available or whether Rob Hogarth would be available. I remember we threw some names out there. I don't remember where we settled on that question, though, to be honest, Bob. I guess, would that be something that, would that be a role that you could play, Marika, or is that something you would want to look into and maybe get back to us?
I'm happy to try to take that on with the help of the chair and other working group members. I'm just looking at the schedule. I don't think Rob will be able to attend because he has another working group he's supporting at the same time, but I'm sure I can convince Margie to join me and help out.
Okay. And, you know, otherwise, Bob, I think that we're probably, you know, okay to do that internally, even if it's not perhaps our first choice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Simonetta is next.
I'm just volunteering, Marika, if you wanted to. Maybe you, Michaela, and I, and whoever else would like to, could meet before that meeting to prep for it and come up with an agenda. I'm going to be there earlier anyway, so I could make time for those.
Okay, thanks. That's noted, and we should probably have an agenda for the Cartagena meeting before we show up in the room so that we can hit the ground running. I would think that in this type of a discussion, we would want to make sure that the role of moderator not only is neutral, but also doesn't overlap with any of the positions. And therefore, you know, I think it's hard to, or maybe possibly unrealistic, to find someone besides staff that doesn't have strong feelings about one of our charter questions, or if it's ETRP or one of the others. So, you know, it might not be realistic to ask anyone but Marika to help us with that role. But let's do we. I'm sorry if I misunderstood your question, Simonetta. Are you saying that you would like to volunteer to put together the agenda before Cartagena, or that you would volunteer to help moderate those discussions?
I said I would volunteer to help put together the agenda, and I'm just saying that because I'm going to be early anyway, in Cartagena early anyway, so I could sit down with Marika and Michaela, and if someone else would like to be part of that as well, just to come up with an agenda so we can start that meeting and we don't have to start with 30 minutes of consensus on agenda making, but we can really jump in and come and get to the points that we want to get to. And I really liked the points that were laid out in the work plan.
Okay, well, let's take that to the list. I think that you know, if we can have something like that either hammered out, for next week's call, or before the Cartagena meeting, and if necessary, maybe we can get a group together in some place that has a cocktail lounge and put the finishing touches on that. That would probably be a good thing as well. I see Bob's agreement when we talk about meeting for drinks there. I think Mikey as well. I think IRTP issues and any PDP goes down easier with it, you know, when we're talking about evening meetings in the lounge. Okay, the queue is clear, and I think we have at least a rough path forward to the Cartagena meeting, the format that it will take, and the agenda still need to be finalized, but we have a target to do that here before the next call, and then we'll get together and discuss some of those when we're at the site. So we now have about 25 minutes remaining in our time, and Marika has put the comment review tool up in the Adobe chat. And Marika, if you could help me, which question did we leave off on by number? I think we were...
Number nine.
Number nine. Okay. The remaining questions, I think there were about 20 questions remaining. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So the remaining, not questions, I guess, but... comments received that we need to be reviewed. There are about 20. And many of them are either direct duplicates or mostly overlap with discussions that we've had previously regarding ETRP. So I think the first pre-screening that we might want to do to these remaining 20 comments is to identify which ones are which ones have been thoroughly covered and which ones are, you know, beating dead horses, if not beating the skeletons of dead horses, versus the ones that actually introduce new ideas or things that the working group hasn't considered or hasn't discussed. So starting with question nine, I think that we can go through each of these, and then the first question would be, is this a novel comment? Is this new material, or is this something that we feel we've already covered? And if it's the latter, then I would think just a cursory acknowledgement that this is something that we've discussed and we can then move on. And I think that will help us get through these comments quicker. Does anyone feel that that approach is acceptable, doesn't do justice to the commenters? What are your thoughts on that? Okay, I see agreement from Paul, and I think Bob as well in the chat. I don't want to read too much into what he's saying there, but Yep. Okay. So we've got some agreement. So let's dive right into number nine. Number nine reads, there needs to be certainty in the transfer process, allowing it to be contested up to 6 months does not help. I think the first question is, do we feel that this has been adequately covered in previous sessions? I feel it has. Does anyone disagree with that? And the queue is clear. So we should acknowledge that number nine has been thoroughly discussed, that many folks do feel that there is a problem, particularly with the 6 month time frame that's mentioned in the ECRP. Question number 10 reads, closer, oops, sorry, Bob.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to jump ahead of you, James. I just had a point to make on this one, but please go ahead with the question.
Okay, so you had a point to make on number 10 then.
I did, yeah.
Okay, so question number 10 reads, closer review of the indemnification provisions recommended, will indemnification be effective should the undoing registrar be indemnified? I think before we dive into the substance of that question, I'm not entirely clear on what that means, just because of the construction of the sentence.
Yeah, this is Bob. This came up a couple of times. There, I think we do refer to indemnification, and there were suggestions that the indemnification needs to go two ways. So it did seem like an area where certainly additional detail, but additional thought, work needs to be put into this one. So I just think we need to flesh this issue out a little bit. It did come up in the work that that Seaman had and I had done.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. And I guess maybe some better context of this comment would be helpful. Because I understand that that says something that they want a closer review of the indemnification provision, but would it be effective should the undoing registrar also be indemnified? Okay, so that's the bilateral thing that you're mentioning, Bob. I do hear someone typing in the background. If I could just remind everyone to please be on mute. And Kevin is next in the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point about number 10 is, that's really a reflection of some of the risk allocation in terms of the process, the whole, ERTP process. And, I agree with the comment that it ought to be very thoroughly reviewed, and this is an item that really requires a high degree of consensus because it's assigning real money, outcomes in this new process. So I agree wholeheartedly that there ought to be a real thorough discussion of that.
Thanks, Kevin. And I put myself in the queue because I think that your question is also reflected by Simonetta in the chat. She asked, can we get someone with legal background to comment on this? I think that, if I can weigh in here as a registrar, I think that we should take a closer look at this as well, including how this could even, does this even apply, in the context of a consensus policy? For example, we don't have provisions about indemnification on any of the other consensus policies. Why would this one, necessarily be different? And secondly, can ICANN even prescribe such a thing, particularly when you're looking at the nature of the ICANN organization and all of its jurisdictions of all of the registrars that have signed the RAA? So, I have open questions about whether any of that stuff is even appropriate, but I think that maybe someone with a legal background or possibly even ICANN legal could weigh in on this question. Kevin?
Yeah, I will make my comment that it certainly, since there is a contract between the registrants and registrars and part of the terms of that contract are dictated by ICANN, for instance, the UDRP, it's certainly something that can be legally put into the contracts. And, you know, it's a question of where you try to enforce those contracts, whether it makes sense. But, I mean, thus far, I haven't found a jurisdiction that has overridden the contractual provisions of the UDRP. And, you know, I would expect the same thing in any new procedures that ICANN would make. I think that the bigger question is, you know, is it appropriate? I mean, part of the rationale for it is that if someone is going to go to the extraordinary situation where they need to invoke the ETRP, we want to make darn sure that they have, you know, the requisite entitlement for it. And part of that sort of raising the ante on it is to put in this contractual provision that's a real money contractual provision, you know, that, you know, if a party invoking the ETRP is wrong and they cause some harm, then there's going to be this contractual liability that springs up from it. And you know, we may or may not feel that that's appropriate, but that was, you know, I think that's the rationale behind it. That's the end of my comment.
Thanks, Kevin. Chris?
Yeah, what I'm reading into that, isn't it, is about the effectiveness. And I think what they're saying is, you know, it's all right, us laymen, or calling myself that, talking about indemnification, but really, is it a practical option for somebody to invoke with, you know, jurisdictions around the world? Unless we're talking of really, really serious damages with result of a hijacking. I think that's what they're saying, aren't they?
Okay. And thank you, Chris. And, you know, I would add on to what Chris and what Kevin are saying with a further comment that ICANN policies, since we've, you know, when all registrars sign on to ICANN policies, you know, this just seems a little bit like a one-off, you know, that we would have this one particular policy identifying risk and allocating risk, as Kevin put it, whereas other policies don't require that. They do, you know, prescribe language that has to be in their contact with registrants, but it is not, you know, it's slightly different when we're talking about registrar to registrar here. Okay, so what is our next move here? Do we want to ping ICANN Legal on their thoughts on this, or do we want to mark this as something that needs further legal review? And if so, what does that further legal review look like? My thinking here, and I'm just brainstorming, would be that we mark this as something that we could possibly ask ICANN Legal to weigh in on. And that would be our first step. Bob agrees, and Marika's in the queue. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm happy to take that back to ICANN Legal. And a suggestion might be I can also see if someone from Legal is actually available to maybe sit in on our session to see if, you know, if they would have any comments or any suggestions in relation to those kind of issues that they could comment on the spot.
Okay. Thank you, Marika. And can we also capture Simonetta and Chris have included some additional thoughts in the chat, as well as the spoken chats from Chris, Kevin, and myself, and just kind of get all of those into the discussion with ICANN Legal?
Will do, sir.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now moving to comment number 11, reading this out. ETRP is not a dispute resolution mechanism in itself, but needs to be tied to a more comprehensive review once a transfer has been restored, for example, UDRP. First question is, have we sufficiently covered this in our discussion? Certainly sounds familiar. I think that some of us have pointed out the distinction between ETRP as a dispute resolution mechanism versus ETRP as being something that just restores the status quo so that some other type of dispute resolution process can kick in. But I'm open to thoughts if someone sees something new or uncovered in this comment, we'll certainly spend some time on it. Any thoughts here, Chris? Chris, I see you. You.
Yes. I think in the first part, we agree with that. When we want to make this statement quite clear that it's not a dispute resolution mechanism. I think the key word here is needs to be tied to. So that would be a decision on our part. Are we tying it to another process, or we're leaving it floating so that other processes can be chosen? I think that's the crux of that number 11.
Okay, so there is something potentially new here in that the process does not specifically spell out that it is linked, or it's just a precursor to a follow-up process, and maybe it needs to do that. Is that correct?
Yes, sorry.
Okay, excellent. Okay, anything else that anyone would like to discuss about this comment? If not, we'll move on to number 12. It looks like we have about 10 minutes left in our time. Number 12 reads, domain name hijacking is a problem that should be addressed, but ETRP is only a Band-Aid, and want to put out to the group that that this is kind of looks like a horse skeleton. And I think that we've got some folks saying that they agree with that in the chat. So then we'll note that this is something that we have discussed in other calls. Comment number 13, the current proposal does not require any due processes. It does not require the original registrant to demonstrate that the transfer was not authorized. I think that due diligence, due process, and vetting of the original request or the concern that this would be abused has been addressed in previous calls, but I'll pause here for a moment if anyone disagrees with that. Looks like the queue is still clear, so, and the chat box as well, so we'll move on and note that 13 has been discussed at length in our previous calls. Now, comment number 14. The current proposal does not include any information on how to dispute an ETRP and suggests that signed domain name sale agreement or evidence of payment of a purchase price into the original registrant's bank account should be sufficient evidence to dispute an ETRP. There's quite a bit in this comment, but I think that, you know, without doing any disservice to the commenter's thoughts here, I think that the general thrust of this comment is that it's not clear how this could be abused. There are not sufficient safeguards to prevent the type of clawback scenarios that we've discussed thoroughly, and that that it's not balanced, I guess, is the one way to say this, that there's not a mechanism to dispute the claims of hijacking. But I will pause here just in case that others feel differently and note that there is something new or untouched in this comment. It was clear. We have 7 minutes remaining. We'll go to comment number 15. Items such as indemnification, how to address potential abuse of the procedure, and an appeals mechanism should be further fleshed out. I think that's a catch-all for the dead horses that we've discussed in other meetings. So I'll just give everyone a few seconds if you see something new here, and then move on. I'm sorry, was that someone trying to weigh in there? Okay. Comment number 16, further research should be conducted to scope out the size of the problem of hijacking. Registrar should be requested to disclose number of domain names hijacked each month. I think that this is mostly covered. I'm open to the idea that there's something new here, but we have discussed supporting data that could be gathered if it is available to support to kind of put some boundaries around the scope. over the hijacking problem, as well as I'll go ahead. I'll interrupt my thoughts here and go ahead with Chris, so I can get my thinking together. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think obviously that's very good information, isn't it? We've talked about this before. Disclosed number of domain names hijacked. Obviously, there's definitions associated with that. But if that information, we've talked about this before, if that information has been collected and can be collected on an ongoing basis, in a couple of years' time, we can look back and see whether this report has been a success or not, or the implementation of this. Without information, we'll never know.
Agreed, Chris. And I think Paul also has a good point in the chat as well, that this could be considered sensitive or company proprietary data by a lot of registrars who may not be very keen on sharing statistics on this information. And then, you know, again, we also touched on this idea that, you know, what number would, you know, where would those thresholds be? You know, if we said that 1% of domain names were hijacked, would that be considered an adequate harm to require a procedure? Well, it depends on which 1% we were talking about. I think there was some discussion that, you know, the targets of these types of names are usually high-traffic, high-value names. I see that we've got a queue building up on number 16, so I'm just going to pause the rapid-fire session here and go with Bob.
Yeah, thanks. This is Bob. I understand the sensitivity of the disclosure. Should we think about, you know, some kind of research mechanism which would allow people to volunteer this information anonymously? You know, certainly the questions that we asked as part of the aftermarket survey, very small sample size, but would lead me to believe it's not as huge a problem as I thought it was initially. Should we expand that? And perhaps use some kind of survey tool to go out anonymously to get further data on what the scope of the problem is and respect, I think, Paul's point where people would not want to volunteer that information necessarily in public.
That's a good point, Bob. And I think that perhaps if it were anonymous or perhaps just generic statistics were requested, that perhaps we could get back something a little more meaningful if we didn't dive into details. But then, you know, I think that the follow-up question still stands is, at what point, you know, does that data actually inform the different perspectives on ETRP? Do the folks who, let's say, feel that hijacking is a problem point to that data and say, see, we told you it was terrible, it's a jungle out there? Or do the folks who are concerned about ETRP point to that data and say, you know, the same set of data and say that this proves our point that this is very rare you know, non-harmful practice. And I don't know that we can, I guess we can collect data, but we should also have an idea of what we want it, you know, what specifically we're asking the data to show. Simonetta, you're next.
I'm with Bob on this one, and I'm wondering if this data could actually be more interesting, not just for this work group, but also for the registrars in general, because if you see, like, you have X number of domains under your accreditation and you have Y number of hijackings, and other registrars of the same size have relatively more or less of that, you know where you stand in the market in terms of is with your registrar is there a larger problem than with others, and then if so, why, or are you more secure than others? You could actually even use it to your advantage and advertise with that. I'm just wondering if that data would not be something that registrars would like to have. I understand that, I guess the stickiest point with this is that you wouldn't want to be perceived as the most riskiest registrar, but at the same time, if it would be beneficial for a registrar to be viewed as a very secure choice, there could also be some upside in this.
Thanks, Simonetta. And, you know, just if I could weigh in here a little bit, just, you know, we went through sort of a similar discussion when we were discussing the frequency of complaints that ICANN received about various registrars, and the registrars were very sensitive to this. Now, I'll go ahead and put my neck out on the line a little bit. GoDaddy had a lot of complaints, but when you look at those complaints as a proportion or as a percentage of the names that are under management, we weren't even cracking the top 25. So it's what's the old saying? There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And I think that we just need to be careful of what we're trying to demonstrate, where someone could come across in a data gathering exercise as saying, oh, look at Registrar X, they're very, very unsecure. Other factors could be at play here. Registrar X could be very, very large, or Registrar X could have a high percentage of high-value names that make for very common hijacking targets. We could put out there, and not to pick on Mr. Serlin a little bit, we could say, Mark Monitor has a lot of very well-known corporate customers. Perhaps that, those names might be seen as more frequent victims of hijacking attempts than just, say, my grandmother's blog or something like that. I see we've got a queue building up here, so I wanted to, I picked on Matt, so he's got to go first on this one. Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to clarify attempts, not hijacking success.
No, right, and that's another good point. It's a distinction being made between successfully thwarted hijacking attempts versus hijackings that actually occur and had to be, engaged in some sort of registrar-to-registrar communications to get them undone.
Yeah, I would just agree with sort of what Paul's put in here in the chat, that I think registrars, by and large, are going to be very hesitant to have sensitive data like this that shows Registrar X had, any number of names that were hijacked. And so I think you're going to meet a lot of resistance in the registrar community for that.
Right.
That's just my two cents.
Right. And we've seen how somehow, where little bits of data can get out into the wild and suddenly tell a different story. I think the primary concern right now is that number 16 seems to be our stopping point. We can pick up there next Tuesday. I want to close the queue to Marika and Paul at this time and note that we're just a couple minutes past the hour, so if we can have a quick feedback here. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just very briefly, just to highlight as well that in the report there are some data that ICANN Compliance provides some time back, and the issue of stolen domains or hijacking is on that list. Ranked as number 10 with 3% of IRTP claims related to that issue. Of course, it doesn't provide further details as to whether it was an attempt, a successful attempt, what the actual reason was for the hijacking or the cause, but it does give an indication that there are complaints in relation to that. And again, as everyone said, I'm not sure how more precise data we'll be able to get.
Okay, thank you, Marika. And Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, James. I was just going to note, Marika's touched on that data point. We've got some stuff from Bob and Simonetta's survey efforts. The data we have is the data we're going to have, folks. At the 11th hour to entertain an idea for further research, if registrars have not provided data, and they could have done it in an anonymized form if they had wanted to, over the year plus that we've been working on this working group, you're not going to get it. So why don't we just recognize what we have, and move on from there. I think it's kind of silly to think that we could suddenly put a call out and get a whole wealth of new information. It's just not going to happen.
Thanks, Paul. Okay, so thanks everybody for sticking around a couple of extra minutes. The next call will be a week from today. For those of you in the U.S., enjoy your time with family and food. And if there are no other last-minute items of business, I'll go ahead and close the call, and we'll turn this back over to Marika next week. I'm sorry, McKelly next week, Marika and McKelly.
Thanks, James.
Cool, thanks, James.
Okay.
Thanks, James.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.